This is Ag Bioscience. Welcome, and thanks for joining. I'm Mitch Frazier, President and CEO of Agrinovis Indiana. This is the podcast where we explore all things Ag Bioscience, the people, the products, and innovations across food, animal health, plant science, and ag tech. We're joined today by a leader with a bold vision to transform the centuries-old shrimp farming industry into a modern, tech-enabled, and local system. With the recent public debut of his shrimp box technology and his establishment of his first U.S. operation here in Indiana, he's here to share more about the work he is leading and the shrimp he is growing. Welcome, Otteraya CEO Daniel Rusick. Daniel, it is good to have you. Welcome to Ag Bioscience.
Thanks, Mitch. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is so good. From the first time we met, Daniel, your story is just fascinating. Great innovation, I think, always starts with a clear problem definition. And you defined the problem to solve in the shrimp industry through your journey. Share more about your story and the work that you're leading at Otteraya to really transform this age-old industry into something that's incredible.
Yeah, well, it's been a long journey, 17 years. So it was basically after graduating. I was still in college, and there was a hurricane that hit the Mexican south coast, very harsh Hurricane Stan in 2005. And I was the president of the student council of my university. And we decided to basically gather goods after watching, you know, these emergency disaster news stories. And this was my first connection with the coast and with the oceans in a way, not in a vocational way.
Sure.
Right. So that basically changed my impression about a lot of things, poverty. And I studied economics, so I thought I knew what I was talking about when we were talking about poverty or development or opportunities. So we decided to start an NGO and to focus on enhancing productive skills for fishermen. And just by talking to fishermen, it was very clear that there was no future there. Fishermen told me, oh, my granddad just went out three times a week and that was enough to feed our family and to cover our needs. My dad would go every day 2 hours and no problem. We would be satisfied. Now I need to go three times a day. No, I need to wake up at 3 a.m. and then go back at 9 and then go back at 5. And sometimes I don't even get money for fuel. So after researching the data from FAO, it was very clear that there's no future in wild catch. But at the same time, we saw an amazing opportunity in seafood demand because it's growing. It's growing on a per capita basis. So you have this amazing opportunity in which you have a big industry that is about $40 billion, $50 billion. That's just shrimp. Aquaculture is $200 billion. And you have the traditional source of supply, which is wild catch. It's not going anywhere. We are just, it's hard enough to keep it at its level of production. So then the obvious answer was aquaculture. We raised money for that. We hired some consultants, experts, scientists, and it was very clear. And we had a project ready for traditional farming in Oaxaca. But then we had a previous minister, a former minister for environmental protection in Mexico on the federal level. And she basically told me, if you do that and you're successful, you will destroy a pristine environment and you will destroy the jungles. And do you want to do that? And
wow.
Then we said, maybe not. So that was in 2009. So that was already 4 years of work. So we got back to the drawing board and we looked for innovation. So we found scientists basically in Israel. We sent them in, we composed a very nice letter. we basically asked for help and we said, we want to do this. We want to enable farming in these poor areas and or underdeveloped areas. And one of them, Dr. Shmuel Applebaum, he's actually featured in the Startup Nation. This is funny because I was reading that book.
Mm-hmm.
And then on chapter, I don't know, it's probably chapter 6 or 8. I don't remember. But the opening chapter, it has a quote like, when they said When I said that I wanted to grow tropical fish in the middle of the desert, they thought I was crazy. So I was reading that while I was waiting for him to come from the airport. No,
small
so I was picking
world.
Him exactly.
Yeah.
So this was amazing. So, long story short, we looked at different kinds of technologies that basically featured sustainability, and basically that means in aquaculture zero water exchange, because traditional aquaculture relies on a huge, like on an urban scale, exchange with environment. So water in, water out, that means pollution, and also shrimp farms are located by estuaries, so by mangrove forests. Mangrove forests, at least in terms of capture of carbon capture, are far five times more efficient than any rainforest in the world. And also they are basically the nurseries for the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we really needed high efficiency in terms of surface area, and also control against disease and zero water exchange. So we started with that. We worked with different species, with tilapia, with marine fish like snapper, snook, and shrimp. And we decided to basically focus on shrimp because otherwise it's basically mastering three different industries, no? All at once. So we decided to focus on shrimp. This was 10 years ago. And then we built our first commercial farm in Oaxaca. We are among the first commercial farms in the world that relies on a zero water discharge system based on microbial communities. So at the time we switched from NGO to startup, raised money, got some grants from the Mexican government, and now we're here.
And we're grateful you're here, Daniel. You and I met, gosh, probably been a couple of years ago now when we first connected. Your story is amazing. And you had some stats that you shared about shrimp. Now, folks who are listening may not have a full appreciation for this market that is shrimp. Give us a little insight on what this shrimp market is, the demand here in the States, and I think maybe even more importantly, where do the shrimp that we eat here in the States come from?
Yeah. So basically, shrimp demand in the world is about probably 7 million tons, no okay. metric tons. Out of that, about 4.5 comes from aquaculture. And this makes it into a... So the market, if you consider... wild catch and farming, it's around $60 to $70 billion worldwide. So aquaculture is basically $50 billion. There was a report from Rabobank that came out last week. Very interesting. It has a lot of data. And if you see the main difference between shrimp farming and, for instance, other kinds of proteins, is that seafood in general relies on international trade. Mm. And this makes sense because there's, I don't know, 500, 1,000 different species that are consumed in the world. And if you want tropical shrimp, it cannot come from Maine, right? So then we are relying on wild catch, on nature basically to supply us with our food, which doesn't make any sense. Relying on the ocean for getting your ceviche makes as much sense as relying on buffalo herds to get your burger. No, it doesn't really make any sense. But it is what it is. No, so basically in the 20th century, there's been a transition. There was a transition from wild catch to aquaculture. So technology was catching up. The problem with aquaculture but the most demanded, the most in demand species, mostly come from tropical countries, except for salmon, which was basically the technology was developed in Norway, and salmon has its own problems, but not the same as shrimp. So the technology that was developed or that was applied is really a very rustic. So farmers are very pragmatic. So they want what works, no? And with least investment possible and without consciousness about what are the implications for nature. And this was basically the paradigm on the 20th century. It's not only, so we also did the same with monocrop agriculture. And now we are realizing about the consequences, no? So in aquaculture is the same. So 95% of the shrimp that is consumed here in America comes from abroad. There's 5% that comes basically from vessels in the Gulf, mostly, that capture shrimp. Everything else comes mostly from aquaculture, from number one producer now in the world is Ecuador. and then India. And this is interesting. This stat is interesting because the shrimp competition for the world leader, the Shrimp World Cup, it's very competitive. So, and it changes from time to time. So the first champion was Ecuador, then for a while was Thailand. Then China started to develop shrimp production, and they were the champions, the world champions for something like 10 years. But then they started cracking down on shrimp farming, one, because of pollution, and second, and probably most importantly, because of real estate, because shrimp farms, they take a lot of surface area, and they need to be located by coast. So, of course, real estate development in China it made more sense to build buildings than to have farms. So China came from being the largest exporter. They were producing over 1 million tons of shrimp, and they exported about 300,000 tons of shrimp. That export was basically larger than the second the second country most important, which at the time was Indonesia. And now then India came, so they started to develop shrimp farming, and now they were the number one, and now it's Ecuador. So it's always changing, no?
Sure.
Because it reflects competition for surface, competition for and also disease, because and this is very important. Every 10 years, 50 to 70% of a country's production is going to be lost because of disease. So the question is not if, the question is when. So, and this is also a problem with the current technology, traditional technology.
Which really led you to begin the work around Shrimpbox. I mean, this is a fascinating development using artificial intelligence, really focused on microbiome. Talk more about what Shrimpbox is and how you're making it, how you're deploying it here in the US.
Yes. So basically Shrimpbox is, let's say it's the second iteration of our technology.
Okay.
For the first 10 years, we focused on biotech, which is basically in order to close the water loop, to close the cycle, you need to manage the nitrogen cycle. So basically BioFlock, it's a technology that is based on microbial communities that have evolved for millions of years, probably billions of years, that use nitrogen, inorganic nitrogen, and turns it into protein. No, they use carbon plus the nitrogen, and they make protein and water, of course. So we got to a commercial level. So it took us 7 years to master this technology on our farm in Oaxaca, and then we started shipping to the United States, exporting to the United States fresh, never frozen shrimp. Getting a very nice markup for that because it is sustainable, no antibiotics, we don't use any kind of chemicals, and the story is very nice, no? Because our farm is 98% managed by a local community in Oaxaca, no? Indigenous community, most of them, they don't have any even high school diploma, and they are managing one of the most sophisticated shrimp farms in the world that runs on biotech. So that story and the characteristics. So also our shrimp has three times more longer shelf life than the frozen commodity, or than traditional shrimp farm fresh. So, but then we need to fly the shrimp. So, and that killed our margins and also killed our sustainability claims.
Sure.
But that test, it was like a market test that there is a market for this premium quality shrimp. So then the question was, how can we grow shrimp ex city, in the city, just close to the consumer? And this really changes basically the business model for shrimp farming. So then apart from biotech, we started to develop the second part of our technology stack, which is software. BioFlock, so you gain this control of the environment, but the cost is complexity because now we need to track many variables. It turns really into a biochemical endeavor.
Sure.
Because now we need to manage these microbial communities and its environment. So if you train somebody, it's going to take very long for them to make the appropriate decisions to understand the complexity. But for software, it's kind of easy. No, because you program these interactions, you program some parameters, green light, yellow light, red light, blah, blah, blah. And then if needed, and if the software doesn't know what to do, it can ask help from a human expert, right? So then, in terms of AI, this is like an expert system, like a centaur, because plus a human, no? So that software part was the second one, but the third one is automation. So basically, engineering, because here cost of labor is way higher than Oaxaca. No, cost of living is way higher here, so labor cost is way higher. So what we did for a long time is through the software, we basically mapped every protocol that is needed in order to grow shrimp. I think that we are the first ones in the world that have this map for macro processes, basically broodstock maturation, larvae culture, nursery, and grow out. And of these four macro processes, we have plus 80 plus protocols. And each protocol has inputs, has outputs, has skills. And then we could design basically gadgets, hardware to replicate what the human was doing. And then the software is basically interacting with the input, getting the input from the pond, and then the output in terms of interactors, you know? So in terms to deal with solids, to feed, to get the data for water quality, oxygen, blah, 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 skimmer. So we developed many hardware, a lot of hardware that it was designed by us. No, we learned from other things that are around in the market, but we decided that it was best that we do it ourselves. So we design our software, we design our hardware, and now we manufacture the shrimp boxes. So shrimp boxes is also a shipping container. Why is it a shipping container? Because a 40 feet HQ shipping container is basically the biggest thing that you can move around the world.
Sure.
For cheap, no? So so this is basically why. So then it's hyper-modular. We can manufacture shrimp farms that would be plug and play. We have, instead of building farms, if you see, so there's experience with building shrimp farms in places like the United States or in some countries in Europe. But one of the main problems is that designing a shrimp farm is very complex. It costs a lot of money and it takes a long time. And you need a lot of permits and unions, I don't know. So we basically skip all that. We manufacture them in Mexico and then they are ready to use for the farmer. So for the farmer, it's very easy. It's plug and play. Then we supply the inputs and then we can start producing.
Yeah, the story around Shrimp Box, Daniel, and the work that you're doing here in Indianapolis, I love it. Just a couple of weeks ago, TechCrunch featured Adariah and the work that you're doing. And I love that they talk about this. I mean, they used your plug and play naming as they said, hey, this is the new plug and play version of shrimp farming. I think what's so interesting, we see this rise in interest and demand, flow of venture capital into controlled environment agriculture, specifically around leafy greens, right? We see indoor growing operations. This really is that for shrimp farming, right? We're able to push the point of production close to the consumer and then be able to deliver fresh, never frozen protein.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and the main difference is that, and I think that this is, I think it's the first example that's dealing with protein, with animal protein, which adds another level of complexity, because with leafy greens, you don't need to think about behavior, no? Whereas in shrimp, you do. And also, one very interesting difference is that there's leafy green production here in the United States. The United States is very good at, right, at leafy greens agriculture. There is nothing for shrimp. So I think that's a very important difference.
Daniel, it is so good to be with you. Time for one more question. When can we expect to see, I'm going to make it two. When can we expect to see an Adariah grown shrimp on our plate, number one? And number two, what's next?
Adariah grown shrimp here in Indianapolis?
Yes, of course.
45 days.
Wow. So at Thanksgiving or at Christmas, we can expect Adariah grown shrimp.
Yeah. A little production in the beginning because, yeah. So these shrimp that I'm talking about, they are already in Belmont Street. They're about 2 grams. So by then they will be around plus 25 grams. They will be very nice. And we can have you to have a taste.
Perfect. And what's next for Adariah?
So right now we're building and basically using our first demo training farm. We want to test Shrimpbox in its final environment.
Sure.
No, because we did some tests in Oaxaca, but there is easy. Here it's hard. And we need to improve efficiencies, mostly in energy and labor. So in the beginning, we will be catering to the premium sustainability driven market, but our goal is in the next 5 years to be able to compete with the frozen commodity and offer basically a higher quality, no chemical alternative to the frozen commodity.
Daniel, I am so glad you chose Indianapolis to locate this first U.S. operation. He is Daniel Russick, founder and CEO of Otteraya. Daniel, it is so good to be with you. Thanks for making the trip.
Thank you very much, Mitch.
And thank you for tuning into Ag Bioscience. You can get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. While there, check out our entire library of archived episodes, and you can always learn more online at agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus Indiana team, I'm Mitch Frazier, saying thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
This podcast is a product of Agrinovus Indiana in collaboration with Inside Indiana Business. Hosted by Mitch Frazier. Panel episodes by Gary Dick. Produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez. Photography by Kaylee Kerr. To get all Ag Bioscience news all the time, visit agrinovusindiana.com.